Who are Andy and I putting in the coping corner? Is it time to fully panic about T. Higgins, or is there hope for the future? And lastly, what running backs do you need to add on the waiver wire after an absolutely awful barrage of injuries in week 6? All that and more coming up on the People's Panic Meter episode. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, October 17th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball. Joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, week 6 was tough. A lot of upsets, a lot of injuries to react to. So a perfect episode for the People's Panic Meter.
Yeah, not generally a lot of scoring and not particularly huge weeks from most of the NFL's biggest stars, right? Like, I feel like all of my fantasy matchups right now are like 95-89 in leagues where, you know, prior to the bye weeks, it was always like 135-125. So it's kind of rough out there. It's kind of lean.
It is definitely rough out there, and the people are feeling it. So let's not waste time here. Let's get into the post week 6, the People's Panic Meter. The show is all about you, the people, the precious people that listen to this show. So every week we reach out to you to see what has you panicked heading into a Monday morning about your fantasy team or your NFL team. You're allowed to complain about anything on this show. We will listen to you after all the action on Sunday. The best responses get discussed on the show. You know this, but if you're new, a couple of ways to submit players or teams. You can shoot a written email, voice memo, whatever, to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. You also can find the posts that I put out on X every single week after Sunday Night Football. That is how you get on the show. However, as we introduced last week, there is a new wrinkle to the People's Panic Meter, and it's the coping corner. Essentially what this is, Andy and I offer two candidates to put into the coping corner. We end up deciding on one. Last week, there was no voting. We just both put Ramondre Stevenson into the coping corner, Andy, which was great because he then appropriately scored a touchdown and had like his best fantasy day the week after he goes in the coping corner. So the coping corner is on washed watch, Andy, as we would expect.
Yeah. Hey, if the coping corner is just going to be like a reverse jinx, I'm all for that too. Cause we need good players.
Yes. And on that note, I will go first here and submit my candidate for the coping corner this week. Essentially, by the way, coping corner, no advice on how to proceed other than to just cope with the reality of the situation. So actually, to introduce my candidate, I have help from Scott S., who sent this audio to the Panic Meter this week. Let's hear it.
Hey guys, Scott from Minnesota here. I need to know whether I can finally just drop Jahan Dotson. He's my wide receiver 4 or 5, respectively, in my redraft leagues. Getting a goose egg on Sunday. I don't know if I'm ever going to be confident enough to start him. Could be looking at a sunk cost fallacy here, you know. Just, he was a highly drafted guy. I had a lot of high hopes for him, but doesn't seem to be working out for him. And I don't know how I can tell my wife for the third straight week that I spent the unemployment check on the Jahan Dotson over again. So can I drop this guy?
Well, Andy, if you all thought you were down bad out there with Jahan Dotson, at least you're not. Well, I don't know how many of you all out there are doing the exact same thing as Scott and explaining to your significant other that you spent the unemployment. I mean, the unemployment check, too, not just like I bet the mortgage on Jahan Dotson. The only thing, the handout we're getting from the government here with the unemployment check, we're spending it on the Jahan Dotson overs, and we are obviously losing. So, Andy, look, I am submitting Jahan Dotson myself here. Scott helped me out to submit this to the coping corner. You know, I've said that I'm not going to give a State of the Union every single week on guys like Jahan Dotson, but we are getting into a really tenuous time in bye week hell, basically, is starting this week. And as Scott said, it's tough to hang on to a guy you drafted as your wide receiver 4 or 5, but I mean, he's just not doing anything. It's tough to hang on to him during this period.
Yeah, he was the top of my list for this. Like, I think Jahan Dotson is pretty obvious for this because of, like, we've talked about him in pretty much every episode of the Panic Meter, and we're running out of new things to say. I think he's a good player. I think this might be one of those situations where, like, you obviously can't trade him. He has no trade value right now. Can't start him. He just gave you a goose egg and he dropped his only target, right?
Yeah, that was cool.
So really rough afternoon for him. And then Curtis Samuel is delivering literally all of the numbers that you might have reasonably expected from John Dotson, right? So that's that is the transaction that makes the most sense in life right now is a simple Dotson for Samuel. I get the drop. I understand it. You can't play him. You can't trade him. I do still think, man, he's too talented a player to not finish this season with like a half a dozen touchdowns. And a couple of spike weeks, but I can't tell you when they're going to be, right? Yeah. Like I would have said this past week or the week before, we're going to be big ones for him. And I don't know. We haven't seen the blow up week yet. If you need it, it's not like the waiver wire is that great this week at wide receiver, but it is full of people who are consistently catching like 4, 5, 6 balls a week. So yeah, I would definitely ditch Dotson right now for one of those.
Yeah. It is what it is. And I think you said that perfectly where like long-term, I actually am not panicked at all about Jahan Dotson, as long as your expectations are very reasonable with him. I mean, for all my Jahan Dotson optimism, I did not, like, I pushed back really hard on the people who are like, oh, he's going to be better than Terry McLaurin. It's like, yo, he's got to be really good to be better than Terry McLaurin, okay? I think he just profiles as a really solid number two receiver. And right now, there's too many guys that are legit earning targets beyond Dotson and Terry McLaurin. Like, Samuel's a good player. Logan Thomas is a good player. I think the lesson that I'm taking away from this is that if you're a non-number one, like, target-earning, target-dominating wide receiver, which, as much as I like Dotson, I really don't think he is that guy. I think he's just a good, solid player. If you're not that guy and you're playing on an offense with a sketchy quarterback, and I think even if you really like what you see out of Sam Howell so far, you have to say he's a sketchy quarterback. That's not going to be, like, a proactive target for me or somebody that I'm going to be putting on, like, breakout lists going forward. I think that's the lesson with Jahan Dotson here, is that as good of a player he is, there are a lot of peripherals that were questions, and those questions have dominated his season so far. And yeah. I think he'll be fine long term, but I just don't think, like, right now, like, if he has 3 great weeks at some point during the season, you can't be surprised at all. But yeah, so he is my submission for the coping corner. Andy, I know you said he had to be at the top of the list, but do you have anybody else you'd like to nominate?
Yeah, this is more selfish than anything. I don't want to write about, and I don't particularly want to talk about Najee Harris anymore. I'm kind of over it. I feel like that backfield is what it is. I don't think we're going to see either player surge to the absolute top where they're getting like 90% of the snaps, right? Like I fully appreciate that some of the Jaylen Warren highlights are really exciting. I don't think they have any intention, while both guys are healthy, of making Jaylen Warren like an 80% of the snaps kind of guy. I don't think they're going to do that with Najee at this point either, right? Like he lost the sort of every down featured role. It's not coming back. We haven't seen a lot of flash from him. I don't enjoy getting mired in Pittsburgh Steeler discussions. they're just kind of a joyless offense altogether. Remarkable that they find ways to win, but I don't like, if we could just take a few weeks off from talking and writing about the Steelers backfield, I would be very appreciative.
Yeah, I mean, their passing game is frustrating enough, and we have to continue to poke and prod and break that down. We could just gladly not talk about the backfield. The only reason I'm going to push back on Harris with you here is that I think people, did anybody even draft him with any level of enthusiasm, right? Like, was there, I don't know, I don't spend a lot of time scrolling on Twitter looking at everybody's takes, but was there any fantasy analysts is like, I'm going to the bat right now for Najee Harris. This is the year for Najee Harris. I feel like, because people did, and I'm one of them, that like, oh, Dotson, I'm excited to draft Jahan Dotson as my wide receiver 4 or 5. Yeah. And I get that he went much later, but it feels like almost anybody that took Najee Harris was like, ah, shoot, all right, he's the highest ranked guy left. Whatever, I'll go ahead and take him. Or am I wrong?
I'm not going to use this podcast to call anybody out, because especially people that I really respect, but I am in a league that live drafted where one industry voice was super enthusiastic to draft Najee Harris for the, you know, for the, for, again, like for workload reasons, for perceived workload reasons that we had every reason to question whether or not they would be there. And now they're not there. Right. But like, this is clearly a guy who needed 350 touches if he was going to be, if he was going to be an RB1 this year. And that is just not happening.
All right, I think we go with Najee Harris in the coping corner. As much as I'd like to put the reverse jinx, if the coping corner is going to be a reverse jinx, I'd really love to put it on Jahan Dotson. I think we've given sound, reasonable analysis with Jahan Dotson, like where that's going to go. Even though, like I said, I actually think, as weird as it is, there's a path for Jahan Dotson to reclaim excitement more than Najee Harris at this point. So I think we put Harris in the coping corner. So it's Najee Harris, it's Ramondre Stevenson in the coping corner. Hey, at least they're living, breathing running backs that have a pulse. So you can you can at least say that right now at this point.
Yeah, it's just a minefield at running back right now. So they're probably, you know, I'm probably being too dismissive of Najee. There are probably people who would be willing to trade for Najee. Shoot, Najee's just come through his bye week. Like, that's one less worry. I know I'm going to get a dozen touches a week. Like, there are probably people that, like, you can probably actually trade him right at this moment.
There you go. So that's actually useful analysis for the coping corner. We have put him in the coping corner. Everybody else might have not. Try to unload him to one of those folks. All right, let's move on to the week 6 submissions for the People's Panic Meter. Josh A starts us off here, says, "Hello, Matt. You do the only fantasy show I listen to. Nothing else out there is better. Appreciate you." We, Andy and I, both appreciate the hell out of you, Josh. Thank you for listening. Question regarding Kirk Cousins. Why? I wish I could just end the email there, but he did go on to say, "Without wanting to, I've drafted him for what feels like 5 years. He's just always there, smiling with nothing at all behind his eyes. Oh my God, in the exact same spot to draft a quarterback who isn't terrible. Kirk Cousins is the rat king of garbage time, and I've gotten used to it, used to waiting until the fourth quarter to see any points. But Matt, you know this. He used to have Justin Jefferson to lead him to the top of Trash Mountain. Now without him, he couldn't top 200 yards against a Bears team led by a Kraft cocktail bartender whose last name is Baguette. Will Mike Kirk ever get back to his over 250 and a half passing yards, 1.5 touchdown ways? This league awards extra points for long touchdowns, so any mid to low tier guys who especially like to chuck it would be sick." A lot of fun there in Josh's email. That was pretty beautiful suggestion here. Andy, I said this on the recap podcast last night. I'm definitely panicked about what I think the Vikings could look like without Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, there is absolutely no question that the absence of Jefferson takes a chunk of value away from Kirk Cousins. Irreplaceable. You know, I've heard a couple of references, maybe some of them sarcastically, to like, so-and-so is going to step into the Justin Jefferson role, as if that's a role. It is definitely not a role. He is one of the most talented players in the league. Nobody, like, those, a certain percentage of those stats just go away because Justin Jefferson can do things that nobody else on that roster can do. So yeah, it's a big flaming problem. We can interpret it, however, first of all, like, well, I can't say first of all anymore because I already said one thing. So secondly, he was pretty clutch last year, right? Like, I know that was a fluky season, mm-hmm. and the number of wins they had relative to how many points they scored and point differential was weird, but like, he was kind of your fourth quarter comeback king last year. So I, like, let's respect it a little bit. He's played well. I don't think he's purely a garbage time phenomenon. Like, Kirk Cousins, what, man, you're gonna look at the, like, all-time leaderboards in terms of yardage and all the quarterback stats, all the raw numbers when Kirk Cousins is done. It's going to be, like, really uncomfortable how high up he's going to rank. So, like, good career, not a Hall of Famer, really good career. He's going to have decent weeks ahead. The immediate week ahead is a really bad one, right? Because he's got the Niners coming up. Nobody's going to touch him on Monday night against the Niners, especially the Niners coming off a loss, banged up on offense, knowing they have to win on the strength of their defense. Like, that's really bad. But it's probably a good thing if you're invested in Kirk Cousins that he got a win against the Bears. And, like, I don't know, the Lions are probably going to win this division, but, you know, it's not over for the Vikings just yet. There was definitely a path without Justin Jefferson for this to get super ugly really quick. But you know, 2-4 is survivable. You can talk yourself into something if you're a Vikings fan. So it's not entirely over yet. And I don't know if it's a good sign or a bad sign that like Cousins committed to the Vikings for the rest of the year either and kind of took himself out of any trade deadline move.
I think it's probably good for Kirk personally because he's going to just moonwalk to a bag this offseason no matter what. And like he doesn't need to go to, oh, let me go make a run with the Jets to a Super Bowl. By the way, you think Aaron Rodgers, who's like performatively throwing a football right now, you think he's going to allow them to trade for Kirk Cousins?
Not a chance in hell. Yeah.
Yeah, no way, because then he doesn't get to be the supporting character in this fake journey that he's putting out there that he's going to. I say all this and like I'm going to get old takes exposed when he's, you know, playing in the wild card round or something.
Yeah.
You know, because of his like miracle crystals or whatever that has healed his Achilles. So I've said all that. Okay, put me on blast when it happens. But yeah, that wasn't going to happen. I don't think the Falcons are about to, you know, trade for Kirk Cousins, even though that would be a wonderful spot. So I get it from Kirk's personal standpoint. Somebody did point out to me that the Vikings winning, you actually should care about that. Like I put it in the don't care column of my recap, but like you should care because that puts the disaster scenario where Justin Jefferson in six weeks is like, you know what? Hamstring's not feeling so well. Okay. So we can just go piddle away the rest of the season without me. That said, for the immediate situation for Josh and anybody that's been riding Kirk Cousins as a QB1 in fantasy, and I did at least have him as my QB1 in one league and the top guy in my super flex spot, I am concerned. I'm a little panicked about what the next 4 weeks will look like. Obviously, you mentioned they get a Monday night game against the 49ers. You're not going to start Kirk Cousins in that spot. Then they get Green Bay, probably a low-scoring slog. They get the Falcons, probably a low-scoring slog. Yeah. They get the Saints, probably a low-scoring slog. I think your best hope is that Justin Jefferson comes back in week 11 and 12 when they get the Broncos and the Bears, but you're just not going to just roll Kirk Cousins out there with a bunch of like average players. And I know that they have pedigree invested in Jordan Addison and they have money invested in TJ Hockenson and Alexander Mattison. They re-signed, but like none of these dudes are even, I think TJ Hockenson is probably, no disrespect to Iowa, an above average starting tight end, but he's not like a Kelce Andrews needle mover.
Right.
And Addison's not that guy yet either.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I fully agree with that. Well, this is a super cluttered bye week, six teams on bye. There might be a chance that people end up dropping somebody like CJ Stroud this week, heading into his bye in a one quarterback league. Right. I don't know these next 3 weeks, like once we get past week seven, I think I'd probably roll Stroud over Cousins.
Yeah. Panthers, Bucks, Bengals. I mean, that Panthers matchup, I'm definitely wanting to play CJ Stroud in that one. Talk about a narrative bowl, by the way. Can't wait to preview that one when we get to it. All right, next one comes in from Gilbert D. Help. Again, I wish I could just leave it there. Help. I have Mahomes as my starter, and it's been okay so far. My panic is that the fusion is complete, and Mrs. Mahomes and Taylor Swift were hugging and jumping down in the... jumping up and down in the luxury box. I don't think this will end well, and I'm afraid it'll trickle down to the field. Am I paranoid? Gilbert wants to know if he's paranoid about this. I don't know if Gilbert's paranoid about the whatever Taylor Swift, Brittany Mahomes fusion's going to go on here, and you know, there's going to be like an on-field distraction or anything like that. But I do think that Gilbert is right to be panicked, just the fact that the Chiefs offense, Andy, is freaking boring. Like it's not fun to watch the Chiefs play offense right now.
Yeah. Gil just happens to be panicked about the wrong thing. This is like bad process leading to the right result here. I think it's like, it's fair to be a little bit dissatisfied with what you've gotten from Patrick Mahomes so far. He's still, you know, there's not another quarterback in the league that I would choose to lead my real life team over Patrick Mahomes, but the lack of talent at receiver is certainly hurting them. Never more than it hurt them in like, I've got Mahomes on some key dynasty teams, which good for me under normal circumstances, but man, it is still hard for me to get week one out of my head, which ended up being like a very poor statistical game for Mahomes that could have been a stellar game. That was like, I mean, the Kadarius Toney plays. I'll just never get over it. It was unbelievable. So we're like, you look at his season right now and he's averaging 40 fewer yards per game than he was giving us last year. So the hope coming into the season, the reason that maybe you drafted Pat Mahomes in like round two, round three, was that, hey, this is the guy who is most likely to give us a 5,000 yard, 50 touchdown season. He's done it before. That's realistically not in the cards, right? Like there's a handful of receivers that we can kind of squint and maybe see a path for. I'm pretty interested in Rashee Rice, but these aren't Tyreek Hill, right? There's no superstar here. There's nobody who's of equivalent value to Travis Kelce. So they're gonna wring every last drop of value out of Travis Kelce before that thing is done. And then they've got to figure out the receiver position. But he's probably still going to finish as a top three fantasy quarterback as long as he completes the season. But this whole year sort of generally feels like it might be, you know, the scoring at quarterback might look like it did 20 years ago, where there's just not like one or two guys who absolutely run away from the field. That's what we've been seeing in the last 5 years or so. But I don't know that we're going to get that this year. I don't know that I see the historic season out there.
Yeah, he's QB4 right now, which it's funny. Like we're sending in a panic email about Patrick Mahomes and he's QB4, but I think it's relative to the way it's looked. It's relative to the way it has felt. And a lot of it is because he's like consistently running for about 30 plus yards a game. Like, because what the hell else is he supposed to do back there sometimes when he drops back? So I understand why you're concerned about this. And I do think that these ceiling weeks where he puts up 30 plus points. Yeah. Are probably just not going to happen unless something changes with the receiving core. And I'm with you guys that I'm excited about Rashee Rice. Like people seem to be very excited about Rashee Rice. And I have been very impressed with what I've seen so far in context. Like I want you to actually, all of you out there, not Andy, because Andy's doing his homework. I want you to actually go out there and like watch the Rashee Rice plays. It's almost the same one every single time.
Yeah.
It's just like, a quick hitting slant crossing route over the middle of the field. And like, he makes it a lot with it, but I want to see them do more with him. Like I don't know if he can do more, but if possible, I'd love to see them do more with him on the outside. Like enough already with Sky Moore as an outside receiver. That was never going to work. I don't know why they're bothering. If they want to play Sky Moore, play him in the freaking slot. Like he's not going to win outside. He's tiny and he's not fast. And he's like a solid ish route runner. That's not a guy that you play outside, and MVS is a wind sprinter. Justin Watson was like the best big play threat, and he's off the board with a serious injury now. So unless a trade happens and unless Rashee Rice like has a real breakout performance, I'm talking like a real NFL breakout performance, not like a look at his targets per route run performance, you know, like a real NFL receiver breakout performance. It's not going to like Mahomes 30 plus points are probably not coming.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. It is weird that, you know, I'm not somebody who's qualified to second guess Andy Reid, but it is a little bit weird that we're seeing Rice, who just I didn't think profiled as like a primary slot guy. He's been in the slot most of the time. Sky Moore has not. It doesn't seem like the best use of these two players. Again, I'm not, you know.
Totally.
I should not be second guessing Andy Reid, but it's a little weird that they're being used as they're used.
Yeah, it's like the Rashee Rice slot plays look good. I just want to see him do a little more than that. All right, next one here. Colby Winslow just says Justin Fields. love the simplicity on this one. Andy, as Josh mentioned earlier, he called the Bears backup quarterback Tyson Bagent a craft cocktail bartender. So I think that actually like, if you're going to one of these fancy, like, and I've been to plenty of them back when I lived in LA, like the, you know, these speakeasies and fancy cocktail bars, I definitely could see a bartender being named Tyson Bagent.
100%, 100%. Yeah. I have a brief story that I can tell you about what a rough weekend this was for, Bears fans locally. So I've got one of my favorite fantasy leagues. It's been around for,
but
like
I thought they were back. Andy, I'm sorry, but I thought you said that the Bears were back.
I was hacked. You're thinking of somebody sure. else that Sorry. couldn't have possibly been me. Now they're back to being what they were before they were back. So I have this one group of friends. I've known them for decades. It's possible that I've known them longer than you've been alive. And we've had a fantasy league going on forever. It's like a, you know, pre Yahoo, pen and paper sort of fantasy league from back in the day.
Good God.
And, these guys are like people from Chicago will know exactly the sort of person I'm talking about. Huge Bears fans, huge football fans. They will never see a college prospect play unless that guy is currently playing for Notre Dame or facing Notre Dame. Okay. So they have no experience with any other college player who's not facing Notre Dame in a given weekend. So, their football weekend began with the Caleb Williams game on Saturday night, right? So it's like the first bad game that Caleb Williams has ever played. Forget that the year before he single-handedly like just kicked Notre Dame's ass, right? Like he played a bad game, threw some interceptions in South Bend, and the league chat is just all, I don't know. I don't see it with this guy. I never liked this kid. He can't handle it on the big stage, right? Like it's wild. So Saturday night, they're out on Caleb Williams. This is not my future Bears quarterback. They're back in on Justin Fields. Really excited because he played like a great standalone game against the Washington Commanders the week before. And then, you know, we get a half of football from Justin Fields. It is basically everything that was wrong with the Bears offense for the first 4 weeks. Taken too long, even in the group chat, throw the ball. Where is Moore? You know, it's like, it's all the things that you were seeing early in the season. And then it ends poorly for him, obviously, with the injury. And then Bajent comes in. And they're all excited. Ben, you know, wow, really excited. We get to finally see this kid. This kid has moxie, you know, all these things in the group chat again. Oh, and then God. Scoop and score fumble. And then like the worst interception of the of the day in any game is thrown. And there's still a little local enthusiasm in certain corners to see what they have with Bajent. But this group was like done talking after the game. Nobody had shit to say. They're out on Caleb Williams. They're out on Justin Fields, and they're mostly out on Bajent. There's no path forward for these guys. So that's where like the Chicago, you know, South suburbs and West suburbs are right now.
There's the Sun Times, right? Had a thing where it's like
back page. Yeah.
Back page. Yeah. It's Bajent time. Basically.
Bajent of change. I believe it's the headline.
Bajent of change. Ironic when it's like the same thing over and over again. Like you said this, what, 4 weeks ago, where it's just like, is it this? Is it that? Well, shoot, yeah. Let's just see what the backups got. I remember the, hey, maybe Caleb Haney's got something better than Jay Cutler going on. Yep. And like we saw Haney puke all over himself in a playoff game. So I'm not nearly invested in the Bears at the level or would ever dream to be invested in anything at the level you are invested with the Chicago Bears. But I know I've seen this story plenty. So the point of the email here, by the way, that should be, we talk about standalone clips that people should tweet out, Andy, from the podcast. If you don't have that clipped and tweet out like it's been a weekend for Bears fan, I'm doing your social copy for you right now. Just post that. You're going viral in the right the Chicago sections. Okay. But anyways, back to the point here, Colby's point, Justin Fields panic. Yeah. It sounds like he's going to miss week 7 at least with this injury. And I don't know. It's just tough with Fields, man, where these high highs are so present and then the low lows are still there. And now we're back to the injury stuff. So I don't know. Do you have any comforting words for people that are invested in Justin Fields?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't really have comforting words here. And we'd kind of put this team in the Bears zone generally. And now we have an injury with Fields. And it's maybe it's they're calling him as of right now. They're calling him doubtful. For week seven, I mean, it's a thumb injury on his throwing hand. So like this isn't going to be quick. I wouldn't imagine. It's like, if I had to bet right now, he's not the Bears quarterback next year, which is, I don't know. I've already gone through the full cycle of emotion with Justin Fields and I really like him. Like man, you talk about somebody who like nails all the intangibles, like, you know, stand up guy in front of the media, in front of anybody, like, you know, if something is his responsibility, he takes full responsibility for it. Even when he made some comments that could be construed as critical of the coaching staff, he immediately clarified them, right? Like he's a lot of things that you want in your quarterback, but it's been a struggle. Like the play on which he got hurt, I think I saw Brad Biggs report that he was in the pocket for 6.1 seconds, right? Like that's why these
making
guys
are bad, making a bad play worse. That's the Justin Fields story.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why these guys are messaging, you know, throw the damn ball, right? Like that's, I don't know. It's been kind of the refrain for the last couple of years. So I'd love to see him get it right in the second half of the season. I truly would. But again, if I had to guess now, you know, this team has the Panthers' number one pick. Like they have a path to getting a pretty good quarterback in the draft. And we're probably headed there.
Well, hopefully you and your Notre Dame buddies can come around to Caleb Williams, because I would say right now he's probably going to be the Bears' week one starting quarterback.
Yeah.
And for you all that are invested in Fields, I know he had those big two eruption weeks, but I'd go back and listen to what I said before those two eruption weeks, which is like, you probably can't just roll out Fields every single week. I don't think he's going to give those ceiling weeks to you. And, you know, God help you if those ceiling weeks come on your bench, but you probably don't want the floor weeks coming in your starting lineup either. So he's going to be a tough player to figure out. Like, yeah, when he goes against cupcake defenses, like the damn Commanders and the damn Broncos, you probably want to play him. But when he goes against even a team like the Vikings, it's very beatable. They're tough to play for a quarterback like Fields, where they're going to throw a lot at you. So
yeah, they just blitz constantly. Like it was actually, like, looking back on it, it's not a great defense, but it was maybe a terrible matchup for Fields.
Yeah, this is one thing I think as fantasy analysts and like fantasy players we can be better about, is that like not all this is a good matchup is created equal. Like
right.
There are, you know, there are different quarterbacks that are going to thrive against different types of schemes, and that was a tough spot for Fields in hindsight. All right, let's move on to some of our social media suggestions here, and we'll stay in the Bears zone because at Heel Money Jovi wants to know, I mean, is T. Higgins just in Bears mode? We can't even panic on him. We just got to cry and move on. A lot of people also sent Joe Mixon too. So just Bengals generally. Andy, I am a little concerned with T. Higgins, right? Like the injuries are there, but also, you know, I said a few weeks ago, I don't think it was on this show, but I don't know who the hell knows what I'm saying at this point anymore, but that the way T. Higgins wins is not really conducive to the way the Bengals need to play offense right now, which is like,
yeah,
let's get the ball out quick and let's make plays in space. Like he's just not that wide receiver. So I know I have T. Higgins on a couple of teams, and I am looking at, by the way, those teams aren't good. If no tie there, no coincidence. Those teams aren't very good. So I guess I don't need to care about them that much longer, but I'm a little concerned about the guy who was like my third or second round pick.
I will say that one of the worst things that a player can do for their reputation among the fantasy community, and this is, you know, it goes the opposite direction, like in terms of how they're perceived by their NFL employer. But if you want to really take a hit with the fantasy community, you should play through an injury. Because like a lot, you know,
that's what players care about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a lot of guys aren't going to be, you know, they're not going to be. If you're not 100% health wise, your performance may lag, and then fantasy people will just crush you for it, right? Like we want you to play, but what we're really saying is we want you to be 100% all the time. You know, yeah. Like I mean, people. I know I go back to it sometimes, but a couple years ago when Antonio Gibson was playing through like a stress reaction in his leg, like he was playing on a broken leg. And man, fantasy people were dogging him, you know, what, like, man, this guy is such a bust. I can't believe I picked him in whatever round. Like, man, that guy's playing on a broken leg for you and for Washington. Cut him a little bit of slack, maybe, you know, and I feel I'm not even like a big Miles Sanders guy. I'm not a big Miles Sanders apologist, but that guy was playing through a groin injury and some stuff until last week. So like, I don't think what he's done to this point is a reflection of his true talent level. And I certainly don't think that a couple of quiet weeks are a reflection of where T. Higgins is. Like T. Higgins had actually kind of settled in at a level where we could expect 1,100 yards and 6 or 7 touchdowns, right? And I actually sort of think that Higgins, I mean, he's got, you know, he's got a rib injury that heals, and you know, he once he comes through that, I think you can feel pretty good about the way that Joe Burrow has moved these last couple of weeks. Like, I don't know, I feel okay about T. Higgins in the second half. I actually, you know, one of those things that our editor makes us do every year is like, oh man, we got to write a collaborative article on guys that we're fading. And, you know, you feel a certain pressure to go with a big name for those articles, right? So Higgins was my guy, but it wasn't because I thought he would, get hurt, or because I thought that Joe Burrow's injury was going to impact him this deep into the season or anything like that. Like, he was just my guy in that one because I felt like Higgins was getting drafted at the top of a tier. And almost anybody who's getting drafted at the top of a pretty wide tier is probably somebody I'm going to fade, because I like the guy that I can get one round or two rounds later just as much. So I sort of faded him for the wrong reason, but it still might burn me. I don't know. I feel like T. Higgins can still come back in the second half and be really, really good. I mean, he does have a 2-touchdown game on it. Like, that really happened earlier this year. He did have a dozen targets earlier in the year, so that's still out there for him.
Yeah, I'm a little more skeptical than you are, it seems, just because I think the way he is, that vertical tight coverage receiver, is just not conducive to, and Burrow can get better, but like, is that going to be, I think he looks much better, but there's still, and your point is so true about this, there's a long way to go from he's out there playing to he's getting better to he is fully returned to Joe Burrow performance. And I think, again, it's just going to take a while to get there.
Yeah.
And even if and when it does get there, I am definitely looking back at all of the, like, oh yeah, let's draft T. Higgins, the number 2 receiver on his team in the second round, Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith. Like, none of those picks have aged really well anyways. So a lot of, it's, I don't know, I'll do a full, like, more referendum on that another time. That could be a much longer conversation. I'm concerned that this one's going to be a long conversation here from The Crow Show sends in Geno Smith and the Seattle pass catchers. Smith is not worth rostering at this point, and that kills Metcalf's ceiling. Andy, I am definitely, as somebody that was a big Seahawks offense bags holder, I am definitely concerned and panicked, not the right word, but highly concerned and highly uncomfortable with the way the Seahawks offense has looked. I asked Scott what his thoughts were last night on why it's gone this way. I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, this is not one of those cases, and I kind of throw Geno into the same, it's kind of same, well, maybe not same draft range exactly, but I get about an equal number of mentions on social on Geno Smith and Trevor Lawrence. And my stance on Trevor Lawrence has been, man, I think he looks awesome. I think there's a big game coming. I'm not that worried about, you know, like, his fantasy line in a game that they comfortably won this past week, but I'm not without concern for Geno Smith, right? Because Geno Smith had spent most of his career not playing at the level that he reached last year. I don't think that he was a fluke last year. Like, I thought his games were just, like, he made some wow plays. I thought he was legitimately great last year, not like accidentally great. That doesn't happen a lot in the NFL anyway. But, like, you know, I thought he was really, really good. And the completion percentage has been roughly as good this year. But there's just not a lot of explosion in this offense. I mean, he's averaging like a touchdown a week. The yardage isn't spectacular. The receivers are great. And I feel like eventually there's going to be some big weeks, but Kenneth Walker has taken a lot of the scoring, obviously. So I am definitely concerned. Again, it's tough to drop him now with 6 teams on bye, other guys injured. But he's not a guy that I'm proactively starting. I've never, like, I don't know, I've set a bunch of DFS lineups. I've never once plucked in Geno Smith. Like, I don't have that level of enthusiasm for him. Like, I'm not taking any proactive steps to get him rostered anywhere.
I think they could have a nice bounce back this week. Geno, the top 2 receivers against the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals quarterback room has been getting demolished lately. I think that probably continues. But then, like, week 8 against the Browns, I'm not trying to play any of those dudes. And then, you probably have to play. That's the thing, is you probably have to play DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett based on the teams you drafted. And those guys can win in those matchups, right? Like, Brandon Ayuk had 76 yards against this team, and he could have had more based on his own play. And quarterback wise, he could have gotten him the ball. Brock Purdy could have gotten him the ball in better spots there too. So, you could probably play those guys. It's just, if they crush you, you can't be surprised. Ravens in the next week's kind of a middling matchup, but then they get the Commanders in week 10. And like, if Metcalf and Lockett are both top 10 receivers that week, cause we know what that secondary will give you, you can't be all that surprised. I just would say that nobody in this passing game is playing quite up to their peak, but I'm not giving up hope that could happen at some point this year.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I just don't think, like, the hope is fading pretty fast for Geno to, like, recapture, you know, 4,000 yards and 30 touchdowns, 28 touchdowns, something like that. I don't know that we're getting that.
I'm with you on that one. All right, next one here. CPH, Seafree, I don't know, whatever. Devontae Adams. Jimmy G doesn't seem to remember he was one of the best wide receivers. He has one of the best wide receivers in football, and it's not like Adams isn't getting open. I'll add to this one, too, that now Jimmy G probably is in danger of missing this week. I don't know how bad that is, right? Like, yeah. I wouldn't say that, you know, Brian Hoyer uncorked that one deep ball to Trey Tucker, right? Okay. Against the Patriots in a revenge game. You know, I don't know what that's worth, but they get the Bears this weekend. It's the backup quarterback bowl, potentially in Chicago or against Chicago. I don't know, man. Devontae Adams was ripping off some heaters to start this year. Jacoby Myers has been really, really good this season. I wouldn't say I enjoy watching this team, though. Yeah. Like, it seems that Jimmy Garoppolo is on a mission. Somehow he's the one that gets hurt every single week, but he seems like he's on a mission to get both of these receivers blown up at any given time. Like, the hospital balls have been crazy. So are the Raiders just that team that, like, okay, by the end of the year, the fantasy numbers will be there. By the end of the game, for the most part, the fantasy numbers will be there. You just can't watch a single second of it.
Yeah, that's probably right. I mean, Devontae did have one of the biggest games that we've seen at the position this year, right? Like, that's on the resume. He had 170 plus yards. It's like 20 targets too, right? Like, he's, you know, he's already had some big weeks. So those are in the bank. It's out there potentially. I mean, a lot of this comes down to exactly how bad the Jimmy G injury is, because I do think that Jimmy is competent enough to drive an offense that yields, you know, one or two highly playable receivers each week. I don't think that he's a particularly inventive quarterback. I don't think he's like a, you know, wow throw guy necessarily, but he's good enough to drive a reasonable fantasy offense. I don't know about the other guys. And maybe they just end up building the entire passing game out of Devontae and Jacoby, and we forget everybody else and it's fine. That may yet happen. But I do think it's probably going to be a pretty bumpy ride for Adams. I will accept a certain level of concern for Josh Jacobs too, because that guy is just getting hit behind the line of scrimmage way too often. Like, he just does not get any free runs to the line of scrimmage, and it's a damn problem. You know, I think he's really fun. I think he's super talented. I think he's a bit of a miracle worker, but it is really hard to live life the way he's being asked to live it right now.
Luckily, they have some pretty easy defenses at different points of the schedule, right? They get your Bears this week. The Lions aren't an easy defense, but I think that could be a good game environment in Detroit in week 8. Giants, green light matchup. Jets, probably not, but like the Dolphins, they get the Chiefs twice. You know, they get the Chargers, they get the Vikings. By the way, I think we talk about like Jimmy and the not great average quarterback spectrum. I mean, if Jimmy G is even still playing by week 14, who the hell knows at this point? But he's the type of guy that could beat up on a bad defense like that. So we shall see. I'll move on to this one here at CJC54. Bijan Robinson, just from the Arthur Smith treatment and malpractice angle. And you're laughing, Andy, and I don't know if you're laughing because you think panic on Bijan is not warranted. And it's probably not, like, panic is probably not the right word here, but am I wrong for thinking that, like, the dreams of Bijan Robinson going on like a Christian McCaffrey, Austin Eckler, like, he is a top five running back, like, those dreams being dead? Am I wrong for that?
I just think that I'm laughing in particular because I am so accustomed to seeing members of Atlanta's receiving core in these conversations. And we just, I don't think we've seen a running back yet, right? Like, I thought the lesson of week one, it was that it was always going to be a possibility that we would see what somebody who rostered Bijan might consider an annoying amount of Tyler Algier, right? Even though Algier was a really good player last year. So, like, I just think that's going to persist. And it's not going to be every week, but I don't think that Arthur Smith is trying to narrow it down to just one guy, unless that one guy is just making superhero play after superhero play, which has occasionally happened with Bijan. If your hope for Bijan was that he would be like 370 touches and 2,000 scrimmage yards, we're probably not going to get the, you know, that sort of season out of him. But I also don't know how you can watch him run and be like, wow, I'm, you know, there's so many people who have legitimate problems in fantasy leagues at running back right now that I feel like you've just invented one with Bijan. Like, okay, I get it. He's not scoring two touchdowns a week and he's not an automatic 25 touches. But I mean, if you're unhappy, you can trade him to literally anyone. Anyone would take Bijan off your hands right now. And he is at the very least tied to a coach who in his ideal world would just be able to run 35 times a game, which is, you know, I think, you know, I think this is what you want. So I don't think, hopefully Bijan is your biggest problem, because if Bijan is your biggest problem, that's a freaking awesome team.
Yeah, I think you just need to, again, recalibrate expectations. And there were definitely some analysts that wanted to sell you that he was going to tear through the league this year. And by the way, he has been incredible this year. I mean, the Falcons seem to find a new way to get him to go viral on social media every single week, which is really cool to see. But the brass tacks of it is that the offense is going to be mid at best. Desmond Ridder, I mean, he would be great to get to mid. That would be awesome if he could even get there, and he's not there. And, you know, he's going to split touches with Tyler Allgeier, who's too good to go away. He brings an element of power that, you know, I'm not saying Bijan Robinson can't run the Tyler Allgeier plays, but he brings a specific element to the backfield. So I think you just kind of have to understand that he's going to be a guy that's probably a running back one by season's end, and probably a guy that you liked having on your team. I just think if you're still expecting him to be a set it and forget it top five, like he's going to have some magical season, I don't know that part is coming.
Yeah, no, that's probably fair. There's no like 2,200 scrimmage yard, you know, 22 touchdown thing that is going to happen here in all likelihood if both he and Allgeier stay healthy. But this is still going to be an awesome rookie year by the end of it. It's, I don't know. This is like the Chris Johnson, Lendale White problem of old. You know, it's mildly annoying that it's a committee, but I mean, everybody's startable.
All right, last one here before we move on to the waiver wire pickups. Ken Neds sends in Devontae Smith. Eagles offense doesn't look half as explosive as last year. Can they support two wide receiver ones like last season? So far, they haven't, and Smith has been the odd man out for most weeks. I don't really know if this is more of a Devontae Smith question as it's more of an Eagles question, because Devontae Smith could have had a better game against the Jets. He dropped two passes. Yeah. He lost a couple contested situations. You know, he had 11 targets. They tried to get him the ball. They had him line up in the backfield and run like easy routes. It was very clear they're trying to get him reintegrated here. So his time is coming. It'll be fine. Whatever. I still like him best out of all of those like wide receiver twos that aren't going to be better than the wide receiver ones that we talked about. He's just too good to completely go away. But I am curious, just your temperature check right now, Andy, on the Eagles, who it's not all the way there. And I'm not quite sure what the problem is, I guess.
No, it's not all the way there. It was a particularly bad throw on the final interception in that game. And it's also one of those situations where you just got to credit the Jets too. Like that's you know, we were kind of excited in the morning because, you know, all the brand name cornerbacks in that game were going to be out. And so you were like, oh man, everybody's going to go off. This is much more of a shootout than we'd anticipated. But then
it worked for two of the three receivers were excited about. It worked for Garrett Wilson and AJ Brown in that game.
I do generally feel like the commitment to, you know, as you put it, get him sort of reintegrated in the offense, and the commitment to get him the ball, even though it wasn't a spectacular game. I thought that was a really good sign. I trust the Eagles generally. I trust their playmakers generally. You know, we like everything about, you know, offensive line took a hit this week, but you know, it's still loaded with talent. Like, it's a good offense that I figure is going to get right. And a lot of this is just a reflection of the Jets, who played a great game.
I think that's fair. I think this is definitely a defense gets paid too type of outing for the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll see. It's not all the way there. It could get there at any time with a team like this. So I think that's kind of where I stand with the Eagles right now. All right, let's move on to the waiver wire pickups here. Andy, give us your top five additions off the waiver wire.
Yeah, huge week on the wire, right? Because we have a ton of injuries. We also have six teams on bye. So everybody's going to have to dive into the wire this week, no matter how good you are. My number five, and I actually debated the number five quite a bit, but I landed on Kareem Hunt. I mean, I think we got a pretty strong message from Cleveland that for however long PJ Walker has to be the quarterback of that team, and man, he was They won. Kind of a sketchy game from Walker. They are going to run the heck out of the ball. Like Jerome Ford had a lot of touches, got a lot of use. I think 19 touches on the day, but Kareem Hunt had 15 touches over 70 yards. He scores a touchdown. Like he's going to have a pretty significant role. And if that guy is going to see a dozen or more touches per week, I think he's a very interesting ad, especially again, as we get into some of these heavy buys. My number four player that we talked about earlier is Rashee Rice. I don't know exactly where this goes for him. And I'm not saying that by the end of the season, we all regard Rashee Rice as a superstar, but he is second on the Chiefs in targets right now. He's seen the same number of red zone targets that Travis Kelce has. He's had some really nice improv moments with Pat Mahomes. He's also he's come down just shy of the end zone a couple times. So they use him when they get inside the 10, inside the 20. That's been fun. He had 72 yards against Denver. He is more often than not, we're seeing four, five, six targets for him. He's played over 40% of the snaps in three of his last four games. So things are just generally trending in the right direction for Rice. Another guy that we mentioned earlier, Curtis Samuel. He doesn't do it in the same way, but he is basically delivering the numbers that we might have expected from Jahan Dotson entering the season, right? Dotson is definitely not delivering those numbers. Samuel is. He has a touchdown in each of the last 3 weeks. We know that they'll get him sort of gadgety is a little bit too insulting, but they give him some carries. They give him some easy stuff out of the backfield from time to time. And they're just using him. They're leaning on him and it's working. And when something is working for a team, I don't expect them to veer away. So I think Curtis Samuel is going to be a thing for a while. My number two, and I almost made him number one, the Cleveland defense. This is objectively, this is the best defense in the league through six games, by a wide margin. They are only allowing 200.8 total yards per game. It's ridiculous. It is 80 yards clear of the number two defense in the league. They're fifth in scoring. They're first against the pass. They're giving up 5.4 yards per pass attempt. They're giving up 3.8 yards per play. They have been utterly dominant. They just shut down and injured the San Francisco 49ers. So they've seen some good opponents and they've cleared them. So, and they also don't have a stay away matchup for the rest of the year, basically. They've already had their bye. So this is kind of the rare defense that you can just park in a roster spot and you're never going to move them, right? It's one less thing to worry about. And you've got an elite unit at that spot. So I think Cleveland, they're out there in 70% of Yahoo leagues. They need to be a major ad this week. And then obviously my number one, it's going to be Jordan Mason. Christian McCaffrey suffers the oblique injury. Is it an oblique? Is it a rib? Whatever. He looked really, really uncomfortable. Didn't come back into the game against Cleveland. And Jordan Mason's been good for 2 weeks now. He obviously does not do any of the McCaffrey things, right? He's not some high volume receiver. He's not, some gifted route runner. He's a huge power runner who is just a bruiser. And when he gets ahead of steam, you can't arm tackle him. He's tied to a great offense, an offense that is ultimately going to be a great offense. Didn't necessarily look that way this past week. But Mason, again, he scored in two straight games. He was the guy that they were leaning on in the 2 minute situation late in the game that could have become a game winning drive. He was the guy that scored the late go ahead score touchdown for them. He's playing over Elijah Mitchell right now. Elijah Mitchell did come back from his knee injury. Maybe they were just working him back in slowly and maybe they have big plans for Mitchell, but pretty clearly right now, Jordan Mason is ahead of him in the pecking order.
I'm with you on that. Any lean in the Rams backfield as we're taping this, Adam Schefter reports that an MRI revealed that Rams running back Kyren Williams has a sprained ankle. It's probably going to sideline him for Sunday's game versus the Steelers, but not considered a long-term injury per source. Okay, we'll see. Ronnie Rivers also, according to Ian Rapoport, is going to miss 4 to 5 weeks with a grade 3 PCL sprain.
Yeah, it's probably got to be Zach Evans, right? He's the guy who kind of finished off a game that was otherwise fantastic for Kyren Williams. And McVay really downplayed the Williams thing coming out of that game. So I'd be very surprised if that's a long-term issue for him. But for a week, it's probably Zach Evans. And then you never really know with Rams running backs. Sometimes a guy pops and that guy ends up starting more often than not unexpectedly. So who knows? I'm not the biggest fan of Evans necessarily. He was a sixth round pick. We'll see where it goes, but that's probably the guy I'd add.
Yeah, notorious truth teller Sean McVay. You can always set what that guy says. Set it to set your watch by it. All right, Andy, good stuff. Appreciate you. Hell of a list. Hell of a segment on all things People's Panic Meter. Fantastic stuff as always. That is going to do it for today's show. While the NFL season is in full swing, all of you out there, the NBA season is right around the corner. It's never a better time to sign up for fantasy basketball with some buddies or even some strangers. Hell, why not? So draft the league at yahoofantasy.com or in the Yahoo Fantasy app on Wednesday. Back in the NFL world, Eckler's Edge returns. We got a ton to talk about. The game of the year, people. No, not Cowboys Chargers. Austin and I's fantasy matchup. Oh boy, can't wait to see what the conclusion of that one will be. Should be a fun one tomorrow. Until then, we're out.